Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The thinking atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
There's a video version of this conversation that links in the description box of this show. With a nation that seems to be on fire these days, with the racial tensions that are prevalent, it seems like COVID-19, you know, was the headline for the last 3 months, and now everybody's sort of moved on from COVID. They're talking about the state of race relations in the United States. We're seeing nations around the world showing solidarity with those who have long been oppressed because of the color of their skin. We're seeing opinions divide about the protests, their worthiness, the riots, the looting. Are those the equivalent of protesting? We talk about the system, how to fix it. Is it fixable? What happens next? What does America look like in the days, weeks, months, years ahead? This is overwhelming. And so here I am in this position, this sort of point position as a host and admin of a community, a storyteller, a communicator who wants to be a part of the solution, right? But I'm also fully aware of the fact that I'm a privileged white guy in the United States. You know, I don't know what it's like to feel discriminated against because of the color of my skin. I don't feel that in my bones. I haven't ever lived it. So who am I to, you know, try to lead any kind of charge? This is a discussion I have. I know, what role would a guy like me have to play? Well, my starting point is to talk to someone who I really trust on so many issues. He's been on the broadcast before. His name is Will Judy. He's the Assistant State Director for American Atheist in Texas. Will, good to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Seth.
You get what I'm saying, right? I mean, who am I to talk about racism in America? Can you give me your perspective on George Floyd? I'm calling it a murder. He was murdered. Can we talk about his death and the uprising that has followed from your perspective?
So yes, I've been talking to people about what's so different about this time. And in my observation, it's just, I think a lot of things have happened in a row. Ahmaud Arbery happened in Georgia, where a black man was jogging, minding his own business, and three white men basically cornered him, stopped him, we want to talk to you, but they were armed. He did what anyone would do if armed men were approaching you in a truck and in close distance. He fought back. They thought that was a threat and said they killed him. He died in the street. Again, the outrage, part of the outrage was that it happened. The other bigger part of the outrage, which is a great segue into our conversation here, is that the police came, looked at the story, looked at the film and said, well, you guys go home. We'll look into it. And they let it go.
Those guys were never prosecuted or brought to any sort of.
They were never called into the police department. They were never charged until that video was leaked. And then the country started saying, what the F? This is absolutely wrong. And then that's when justice happened.
Now you can say what the fuck here, Will. I mean, come on. Everybody's feeling it. What the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what we said. But we're pissed off because if it wasn't filmed, if there was no film, they would still be walking free. They'd be telling stories, drinking beers with their buddies. That's America. That's the story of America that people don't want to acknowledge. And we'll get to this later, but we're going to have to acknowledge that if we can move forward. But that was one example. Breonna Taylor happened soon after, before that. She was sleeping in her bed along with her fiance, I believe. And the police served a no-knock warrant, but they were at the wrong address. So they went into her house, her apartment, shot her dead in her bed. There was a firefight. I think her fiance, as any person would do, if people are busting in your door, he was armed, you grab your gun and you protect your family, your castle. He didn't get hurt, but in the firefight, she was shot dead. So again, no-knock warrant. There was really very little of an apology, I believe. It just this happened very soon after, or right before Mr. Arbery's murder.
So what they respond by saying, "We're so sorry," and then they move on.
Yeah, shit happens. Yeah, is that okay?
And what about this lady in the park? Right, I mean, she's that out. Happened. Dog's not on a leash, and what happened there?
Yeah, that was Amy Cooper. That was on a Sunday, May 24th. She was in Central Park. Her dog was not leashed, which is a violation of the law there, and which Christian Cooper, bird watcher, African-American gentleman, calmly reminded her, hey, can you put your dog on a leash? He's on a board of a bird watching society, so he often goes bird watching. I'm sure he often sees people with their dogs off of the leash. So it's something that I think he's used to asking people to do. She was offended. She used her white privilege to call the cops.
You take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
Can I take any pictures? Calling the cops.
When Christian refused to stop recording her, the video shows Amy Cooper grabbing her dog's collar, moving away, and dialing 911.
Please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
There is an African-American man. I am in Central Park. He is recording me and threatening myself and my dog. I'm sorry. I can't hear you either. I'm being threatened by a man in the Rambo. Please send the cops immediately.
That call is something that white people, I think, can identify with. They can put themselves in that position. At least it reminds them that they do have the power to do that. And I think a lot, at least the people that I surround myself with, they think it sucks. They think it's horrible. And then very next day is when George Floyd incident happened.
Now I'm going to come to George Floyd in just a second. Forgive the interruption, but I'm sort of partitioning through these ideas and I want to camp out. Mm-hmm. You and I are at the park, all right? Let's say you and I are both part of the same bird watching organization, all right? And we're in, you know, let's say this is like a parallel universe where I stumble upon the lady who has no leash on her dog and I say something to her. And in another circumstance, you were to stumble upon her and say, hey, put your dog on a leash. The response is likely going to be very different to each of us. And it's going to be because of the color of our skin. Would you agree?
I would agree. It depends on the person, but it's something that I would expect. I always have to assume that scenario would happen. So, and then there's some people that are perfectly, they would treat us exactly the same.
This was published on June the 4th in The Guardian by Derek Johnson. It was called, "In America, Black Deaths Are Not a Flaw in the System, They Are the System." This is just one paragraph. It says, each year, more than 1,000 civilians nationwide are killed by police. and black people are 3 times more likely to be slain than white people, despite also being more likely to be unarmed. Only 1% of those officers, 1%, ever faced charges. This kind of weaponized racism takes a toll on black people nationwide. It starts early. The vast majority of black families find it necessary to have the talk with their children. No, not the one about the birds and the bees. This talk prepares them to expect unfair and disrespectful treatment from police and to accept such treatment because the slightest objection could result in their deaths. Will Judy, what are your thoughts, my friend?
I'm just going to focus in on policing because that statement can be said of criminal justice, even health, a lot of factors in America, but specifically about policing, the data overwhelmingly supports that. And it's not just a recent thing. It's through the ages. My thought is that it starts with dehumanization, which has happened since before this country was a country in the 1600s. It's a long history. Jacqueline Bonalora wrote a great book about it, explaining it in more detail. But you dehumanize black and brown people. So they realized back then that I don't think they could elevate these white people anymore. They just couldn't do that. So they wanted to lower the floor, so to speak, and just make black and brown people less than human. And it was written into the Constitution, but that's where it starts. So fast forward, policing has its own long history of slave patrols and recent Supreme Court protections that gives them multiple layers of protection. Thin blue, that blue wall, whatever they call it. So they're protected and they have that power. And when you dehumanize people, when black and brown people are less than you, just less human than you in your mind, with the myth added in that they are more prone to violence and drug use, that translates into more killing, more anxiety when police officers encounter black and brown people.
If you see then, you know, he's got the officer has his knee on the neck of George Floyd, suffocates him to death, and then is not immediately arrested or called into question by his fellow officers or any of those types of things. In fact, they are complicit and charges are being filed, etc. That is statistically much more likely to happen to a black man than it is to someone like me. Can we talk about the police force in terms of an institution? I see a lot of declarative statements using the words all or none. If someone comes to you and says, cops are racist, how do you respond, Will?
Complex story. Again, there's two different realities. Your reality, your approach to cops is going to be different than mine. And I personally, I don't have a lot of bad stories with police. I was stopped one time when I was younger. Multiple squad cars, maybe some guns, but it didn't last too long. Nothing bad ever came of it. But it was a clear result of the color of my skin. I mean, it really was. But the police system in general was built as a racist system. I'm not going to go so far as to say all cops are bastards. In any group of people, you're going to have good and bad. But from my experience, I have to assume that they're all bad. Even if they're not bad, and if they're so-called good, they're not doing anything to rein in the bad people who they know are in their precinct. Every precinct has these bad apples, they call it. They're trying to make them sound good or less bad than they are. But in every precinct, they know who should not be having a badge, who should not have a gun because of their racist or their hot-tempered. They're a danger with that gun and the badge. But they cannot or will not do anything about it either because they'll be discriminated at work. They'll be reprimanded. They'll be put in a desk. It just, and then in that culture, they do a poor job of policing themselves. So,
like the crime of silence, right? I mean, ambivalence actually enables the oppressor.
Well, we saw that again with the George Floyd. We saw a perfect example of dehumanization, of silence.
It's interesting to see law enforcement historically, you'd mentioned, right? I remember reading and seeing the history back in like the March at Selma and whatnot, and so often law enforcement was the one who was bringing the violence into the what were otherwise peaceful protests. And I'm not trying to put everybody in a specific box, but I am alarmed, Will, by the escalation. You know, I mean, I just don't know that you're not going to fix this cultural problem by firing rubber bullets and pepper balls and tear gas into the crowds of protesters. I have, you know, been rebuffed by other people who say that, well, you just can't let lawlessness take place. There has to be some law and order. But you and I, you know, we look at law and order. Quite often people use that phrase as a way to frame an excuse for oppressing minorities, right? If they protest, they are now against law and order. They must be crushed. You see Trump, he's using the word dominate. You've been watching sort of Trump's response to all this? What's your take?
Yeah.
Is that another what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, let me address your first statement before I'm getting my thoughts together. It's just complex. Life, adulthood, the world is complex. So it's not as easy as protesters, riots, police, law and order. I mean, it's who's causing the violence in the streets. There's reports of police starting it. There's reports of white supremacists in the crowd starting things. I tell people, it's like looking at a cube. There's six sides to this cube, but you look at one side and you think you know the answer. There's six sides to this cube. So things are more complex than just law and order, protesters, blah. I'm still learning.
Thank you for that, Will. Thank you for that. Like, nuance is, like, the internet almost has a rule. No nuance allowed. Mm-hmm. And people want to say that the protests are one thing. And so I was speaking because I feel like a desire to be a part of the conversation, that I understand the uprising. I understand that peaceful protests haven't been effective, so some people are not peaceful. But I can also condemn burning out the shops of their neighbors, you know, our brothers and sisters, advocates and allies, or mindless violence in the street, you know, genuinely harming or killing our brothers and sisters in the name of quote-unquote justice. I resist that. You know, I know that there are horrible cops. I know that there are cops who genuinely do stand with the protesters. I mean, none of this stuff fits in a freaking cookie cutter. And that's part of the problem, right? It becomes part of this fog of war. Everybody wants a simple solution, but it's not a simple problem.
Right. And the people that do want to change are out in the streets working for change. They're not the ones causing the violence. I know I can say that pretty confidently. The real protesters, the real activists, are not burning and looting. That's where it gets very complex. All of this violence gets in the way of their intentions, of their intent. So
does violence have a place? I mean, I've seen some people who say, you know, the time for half measures is over, man. We tried, you know, Colin Kaepernick tried kneeling and they said, screw you, and, you know, vilified that guy. So if that's not going to work, I've seen it on, you know, Facebook, let's burn the motherfucker down. I mean, is there merit to this? I mean, is it a worthy sentiment to say, well, we tried fixing the system by the rules, screw the rules? What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. That's just looking back at history. Let's just say recent history. You're right. Peaceful protests, kneeling. We've been trying that for a while. Nothing changes. And so violence, again, that's just a simple term for it, but it is a reaction to it. It does get things done. I hate to say it, but it is part of the way things change. And you just have to look back at recent history, long-term history of the USA to prove that.
Will, I hear a lot of people who say, you know, you needed your Martin Luther King Jr., right? Speaking the language of love and unity and, you know, leading in that very sort of tempered way. And then you also needed your Malcolm X, right? Both sides of a coin with very different attitudes and approaches. What's your take on that? Having, You know, the idea of peaceful, measured protest, using language, right? Defeating bad speech with better speech, bad ideas with better ideas. And then the other side of the coin is more, we're going to go out and strong arm against those who've oppressed us. I don't know where to take that question. You just tell me. Okay, what do you think?
Yeah, you're right to call them two sides of the same coin. They want the same. They wanted the same thing. They were both fighting against social injustice, which still is happening now in different ways. But toward the end of their lives, they were kind of coming together. They both from my readings, Martin Luther King was kind of approaching more than Malcolm X. And Malcolm X was, I'm going to say, softened up. He didn't soften up. But his plan, his outlook changed once he left the Nation of Islam. But I digress. We need both. I'm more of a Malcolm X type person, where we need somebody to point out the injustices, make white people and people with that want that white privilege or think they have it, make them uncomfortable. I love his quote. I'm paraphrasing, but basically he said, if you, black and brown people, if we have a 9-inch knife stuck right up in our back, pulling it out 2 inches is not progress. Pulling it out 5 inches is not progress. You have to take the knife out completely. But the best part of the quote is, many people in America won't even acknowledge that there is a knife in the first place. And that is where you have to start. You have to kind of take a step back and put people's faces in that pile of shit and make them smell it and acknowledge that it's a pile of shit. And that's where things start. And it's a tough sell. It really is. But I think this George Floyd video was that pile of shit that America can produce. And so people are aghast. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's
so
interesting. You know, in my circle, which is, you know, this circle, I live in, you know, red state Oklahoma. You know, this is MAGA country. And we'll come back to Trump. I haven't forgotten that angle. But somebody had posted that, you know, this stuff isn't new. It's just getting videoed. Right.
Right.
I mean, before the cell phone camera, how much was never known about? How much was never seen? And now when everybody's got a camera on their hip, it's a lot harder, or at least marginally harder, for the cops to get away or racists to do what they do. At least there are larger optics for the injustices that are happening, right?
There are, absolutely. It's making people more aware. I think one of the next steps is letting people know this stuff that's getting filmed, it happens and happened all the time. And with modern society, it's frowned upon, but back in the 30s, 40s, 60s, police did this on purpose to prove a point. It was not a glitch in the system, but it was the system. It was a tool they had for law and order to spread fear in black and brown communities, keep them in their place. So the pictures you see of people being lynched, the aftermath of it, there are cops that threw that rope over the branch of the tree in the community. They were part of that system. And it wasn't a glitch. It was part of the system.
Talking here with Will Judy. He is the assistant state director for American Atheists in Texas. He's also a physician. You're an urgent care doctor. A patient comes in with condition X, whatever that is. I'm a white doctor. You're a black doctor. Are we treated differently from your experience?
Man, you know what? That's a great question. I don't see it as much. I can't say that there's obvious differences in the way we would be treated. I just can't. I can't. I don't know your experience in that room. And I don't really talk too much to my white colleagues about it. My own personal experience is I've been doing this for a decade or so now. I mean, not doctoring, it's been since 2000, but yeah. My mindset, as I started getting more in the secular community and getting more socially, social justice aware, I make it a point to bring that to work in a very subtle way. I realize that me going into the room and a patient, it's a different power play. I guess I'm in a position of power, air quotes, for the people on the podcast. And they're the ones coming for help. Now, I also understand that a lot of white people rarely interact with black and brown people. So this may be the only interaction they have for a week or a month or for whatever amount of time. So it's an extra burden I have, but I have that mindset that I'm not trying to impress these people, but at least I want them to have a good interaction, a normal interaction with somebody, so that I'm fighting this dehumanization in a very subtle way. Now, specifically, my travel, the urgent care, we have multiple locations. Some places are more in more rural places, known kind of more racist areas, red caps, I call them. I've encountered a few in the room. I walk in and I get a look. Like, I can't see into their hearts as you hear in the news, but I know the look and a bristling or something of the effect. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, I'm like, okay, all right, let's do this. I'm very nice to them. I'm very polite. But in my eyes, in my attitude, I'm letting them know, look, motherfucker, I'm smarter than you and your whole family. I'm in this power position. Don't try anything. Like my words are very nice, and I want to help. I want to help this person because I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to change their heart or their mind, but at least they walk out of there like, oh man, that didn't go as I expected. They have a little heartburn because it clashes with what their prejudices are, their biases are. The next time they hear a joke, a bad joke, they'll think about me, and it'll just create some cognitive dissonance, which I love. I love doing. I'm planting seeds in my daily life, in my work, and when I work every day, I'm planting these seeds. When I see kids, I want to be a good example to children, black, white, whatever. If it's a white kid, I want them to walk out again with a fun, great interaction with this person that happened to be black or brown, and it plants a seed in their brain. I love doing that. I think I'm doing, I don't believe in karma, but if I did, I would be contributing.
I get it. I mean, it's cause and effect. I mean, you're humanizing the whole experience. They didn't see right. You as a color. You were a human being and you were a healer and you showed empathy and compassion despite some of the, you know, reservations based on, I mean, you said red hats, right? We don't exactly caps, yeah. Live in the time of, I don't know, there's a tonal vacuum at the very, very top where we are desperate for words of strength, empathy, compassion, reconciliation, progression, right? We're hungry as a nation for true leadership. And instead, we see divisiveness and awfulness. You know, what's going on in your mind when you see him doing what he does, saying what he says?
The obvious answer is that he should just shut up. He makes things worse. You're exactly right. He makes things worse by tweeting and speaking and just being on camera. He should shut up because he's not going to unite people. We all know that. But he's not going to shut up. So, yes, you're right. He makes things worse. Why does he do that? Is he just ignorant? Is he really a white supremacist? Is he actually a little bit smarter than we think and he's doing it for a purpose to solidify his power because he knows that the red caps are the ones that are going to keep them in office. I don't know. I don't know that.
Now, do you mean like he's just kind of dog whistling to his base?
It's stoking fear, and fear works as the easiest, the quickest way to get your base riled up and to vote and to fight for you out there in the churches and spread the word is fear. It's easy. It's so easy these days. Also, coronavirus, and then now the demonstrations. To stoke fear. I've been fascinated with the social psychology of all this since 2016. And that's where my reading and my energy was leading me to educate people on why these red caps think the way they do, why hypocrisy doesn't have the same effect that it does, or at least revealing hypocrisy.
When I come back, we're going to talk about racism in the United States. Is this what they would consider their time? Their era? Do they feel emboldened and empowered with the Trump administration in office? We're going to talk about that with Will Judy on the other side of this.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
In the wake of the protests going on, not just in the United States, but worldwide, I'm speaking here with Will Judy, the Texas Assistant State Director for American Atheists. He's also involved with Black Lives Matter, and he has a perspective that I think will help all of us when it comes to dealing with the unrest happening domestically and around the world. Our conversation continues. We know racism remains. Racists, right? They're not going to go away. But do you feel like, you know, where once they were a little more wary of sticking their head out the door, ever since 2016, do you feel like they have been given a voice? They feel validated. Now they're more racist. I mean, I know it's a subjective opinion. What's your take?
Yeah, there will always be racists. I get it. But my goal is to minimize their power. My goal is to change the system so that it's a system that discourages them from popping their head up. It relegates them back to under a rock where they belong, in my opinion, because it makes this country weaker and more divisive.
Well, how do we do that, brother? I mean, how do we push our way through them, right? If we can't convince these people, how do we evolve through and past them?
It starts with addressing the social injustice that is baked into our cake. It starts by admitting that there is a dehumanization of Black and brown people. That's really where it starts. I think that's a foundation. And without that, nothing can be done. So the more people actually truly believe that all people are the same, that's the only way we can move forward. But if you're born in this country, which both of us are, you're a white supremacist. It's just baked into this country. I'm a white supremacist, and I fucking hate it. It's something I have to deal with. And I've, over the years, I can deal with it pretty easily and recognize these thoughts welling up in me. But everybody who's born in this country is a white supremacist. White privilege is the matrix of who America is, and it's exercised without thought. So it's hard to convince white people that it exists because they just don't think about it. They walk in their daily lives not knowing that they're privileged. Whereas in my experience, for years, when I go out to jog, I put my license in my pocket. I fucking hate it. Every single time I put my license in my pocket to go for a jog, I think about it and I hate it. It's that mental, just another mental thing I have to do because I don't have that privilege. What if? So it's little stories like that, and white people, just to acknowledge that white privilege exists, acknowledge the knife is there in our backs, is kind of the first step. And over the years, there's more white people that are acknowledging that. Nowadays, I see a lot of people wanting to be allies. There are ways to do it. I think that's kind of what your question was leading up to. There are, this is just my take. I mean, you're going to get, if you talk to other people, more red people, they're going to get different thoughts. But what you said in the beginning about shutting up and listening, and that's for this acute phase, for this stuff happening now, I think that's a good way to go. If you have a conversation with a Black or brown person, you're going to, when they were saying something, you're going to want to instinctively like be like, blah, 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 and chime in or try to give some kind of anecdote or blah, blah, blah. Don't do it. Just shut up. You have nothing to add to this conversation. Trust that we know our history better than you know our history. And listen, that goes a long way in this acute phase, we call it. Just all this unrest happening now, that's a good way to go. Your mindset should be, I have nothing to add to this conversation. I'm going to listen and learn.
Is Black Lives Matter an example? This is a leading question because I know the answer, but it's a part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a group of people and you say Black Lives Matter, which is an effort to try to demonstrate how things have been weighted against a specific demographic, the discrimination and dangers that black people face. And there's a group of people who are like, all lives matter. They immediately knee-jerk the other way. It's like they don't really understand why focusing on a problem would be a meritorious thing to do. You know, it's not a problem for me. Doesn't my life matter? I'm white, or I'm this, or I'm that. Perhaps you can give me an elaboration or better perspective. Black lives matter. What do you think?
Yeah, the Black Lives Matter is in the name. It's an attempt to smash that dehumanization. It's not to elevate black people above everyone else. It's to elevate them to the level of everyone else in this country, in the minds of this country, in the minds of the system. So it's in the name. It's trying to smash that dehumanization.
What do you think of this analogy, Will? I mean, as someone said, it's like you're at a table with 10 people and Bob has no food and everybody else is enjoying dinner. And you say, hey, everyone, Bob has no food. And everybody else says, well, what about me? You know, why aren't you talking about me? Well, you've got a full plate. You know, you've got your dinner, but Bob has no food. And I think, I don't know if it's a perfect analogy, but the idea that you are, you know, you've got a hyper focus. I don't know where you stand on identity politics. I honestly see benefit and utility to drawing a circle around marginalized groups. I'm also that cat who, you know, kind of we are the world. You know, we're all the human animal. We're all the same. We're all brothers and sisters. Let us join hands. You know, I'm kind of two minds on it. I'm kind of all over the place. But I mean, does that analogy ring true? You know, the person who is going hungry is the one we should focus on?
Yes. I think that those people who have the food on their plates, there is a mindset that this is a zero-sum game, that it's either all or none. If I help this Bob get some food, I am going to suffer. I'm going to lose. I'm going to be Bob. But it doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be the case. You can help Bob and improve the health of the whole table. Bob benefits from that, and the whole table benefits from that because everybody's healthier. So that mindset of a zero-sum game, again, it's kind of a simple way to say it. I know every kind of situations are different, but for the most part, I'm pretty certain that it is not a zero-sum game. You helping Bob out helps the whole table. Yeah, identity politics, it's bad if that bubble is trying to influence legislation and make rules for a greater society. But there's benefit to something like that bubble identity politics if you're trying to smash injustice and a rule that's oppressive. So the civil rights movement, you could call identity politics, but it was trying to smash injustice. Whereas Christian nationalism is identity politics, but they're trying to implement legislation, implement rule.
To prefer one tribe over another.
And make that the law.
Talking here with Will Judy. He is the assistant state director for American Atheists in Texas? Yeah, live in Houston, right?
I do.
Is there a heavy racial component in your city? I mean, you guys seeing the protests, the unrest? Are you seeing this sort of outrage spilling into your city?
Mainly peaceful protest. There was a huge one because George Floyd was from here and his family is here. So his family marched as a peaceful protest. It was 60,000 people, I believe. It was wonderful. It was terrific. We don't have a lot of the violence. There's some. But again, I've heard references to police kind of aggravating people and stoking this violence, kind of a complex story. But for the most part, it's been a peaceful demonstration here in Houston.
It's hard, isn't it? I mean, somebody posts a Twitter video and, all right, well, here's a protester smashing windows and stealing a microwave. And then you see another Twitter video and it's a cop who's bludgeoning somebody over the head. A reporter is arrested on live television. And you watch another video and there's a white kid who beat somebody with skateboards. And then you see another video and it's Candace Owens doing what she's doing. And after a while, it becomes so obfuscated that you have no idea what's going on. That people like to say, well, the protests are this, and they say one thing. But there's so many gears in this machine. You know, we have to try to see through the fog, I guess, and see the larger picture. I guess ultimately what needs to come out of this is the larger conversation about equality, right? I mean, when the smoke clears, as the world changed. How do we change the world? What happens next when the smoke clears and everybody sweeps up the broken glass and the protesters go home?
Great question. The things happening now, there's peaceful demonstrations, they're pretty serious, and then there's violence. I kind of separate the two for the most part. It has to happen. This is how change happens, at least in the short term, getting justice for George Floyd, showing some kind of proof that the justice system works as far as not protecting a policeman that murdered. But the long game is kind of where my mindset is. That's where I think I have the most power with helping. And the long game is changing the system, burning it from the inside. And I say burning because that's kind of what has to happen. This system's been in place since the founding of this country and even before. So it is not an easy fix. These demonstrations are going to have some short-term effects, which I think are going to be, there's a lot of positive from them as far as getting results for criminal conviction, social justice, that type of thing. There's negatives and positive. I get it. But the long game is where my mindset is to change it from the inside, for lack of a better term, and change the system, whether it's increasing voter turnout, getting more adult legislators, representatives in government, changing things from the inside. That's a more of a long play.
What about the police force? Where would you start there? I mean, if it was you, let's say you're emperor of the universe and you can just decide. This is where we start with the police forces. Do you have an opinion?
I have two thoughts. You either have to burn it down, break it, and start over, or you have to have little incremental changes in cities and counties across the state slowly. The first one's not going to happen. I always explain it as if you bake a cake and you use bleach flour and you bake it, it's there, you taste it, and it's like, oh, I'd rather have whole wheat flour. You can't take that bleach flour out of that cake and put in the whole wheat flour. It just doesn't work that way. It's baked. You have to make a whole other cake with the bleach flour that you want. So that's where we are with the police force. It's just a racist system at its core. So to redo a whole system won't happen. You cannot do that. So you have to more realistically, that's when the realist in me kicks in, you have to try to find police precincts, city by city, county by county, and see where there are examples of real reform and good precincts, and try to replicate that slowly across the nation. That's going to take a generation to do, but it's something.
Is it like white blood cells in an infected body? Like, I'm trying to speak to a doctor using medical terminology. How do you like that? Well, I'm sure it's terrifying to you. But, if the body's already in place and it's the only one we've got for now, and let's say we stick with it, then it's going to be up to those who will root out and eliminate the disease itself from within. I mean, am I tracking with you?
Man, I get that. It's kind of a reach, but I actually get that analogy.
Whatever. It's intimidating. I mean, I'm looking for a medical analogy with a physician. That was a stupid, stupid thing to do.
No, dude, actually, I like it. Yeah.
Okay.
I like it. I can see little.
Well, I tried to shut up and listen, right? I mean, I'm trying to take your advice, but I'm also that guy who's sitting on the edge of his seat, and I'm kind of a kumbaya kind of guy. I just want everybody to come out of this better. It's almost like showing the racists, those KKK members who agreed to take the DNA test. Right? Hey, would you agree to prove the purity of your bloodline? And they're like, well, hell yeah. And then they come back and it turns out that they've got all these other sort of genetic markers that show they are not quote unquote pure Aryan. And I sort of come back down to that. We are all really the human animal. We're all the human race. And I have that attitude and I want to try to make a difference. But it's one of those things where I'm like, do I have a place in this somewhere? Do I need to sit back and let somebody else do the heavy lifting? And then if I do that, am I being ambivalent? Am I part of the problem? Talk to me, Will. I mean, what do you need? What is the cause for equality need from a white guy like me?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've been talked to Mandisa Thomas about this yesterday, and we're going to have a Zoom meeting tonight, Houston Oasis. It's all about that struggle against injustice, and you're seeing that play out right now. And all these demonstrations, everything's going to calm down in a week or two or maybe a month from now. When things calm down, that's where the real work happens. It's just a long-term fight. What we need from you is a couple things. One, the more important thing is to fight for us and speak for us when we're not around. So at work, if there's no diversity, if you're at a table with the board members and there's no diversity, speak up. Why are there not more Black and brown people? Work harder to get a more diverse board or at the workplace. Again, you're going to get a lot of pushback and there's risk to that, but that's what we need. We need people just across the country fighting against the lack of diversity and just fighting against injustice. If someone tells a certain joke or a comment, push back on it. That's one of the things that we need. And I already went over just acknowledging that there is injustice, acknowledging that there's dehumanization. That's kind of where it starts. Educate yourself. There's plenty of books out there. Reading about it and living it are two way different things, but at least it's a step in the right direction. The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander is a great book. White Fragility is a book. 13, the movie 13 is on Netflix, I believe. Tim Wise has some great podcasts about, he's been doing it for many years, about injustice and racial injustice. Local communities, I hear Black Lives Matter Houston. If you have some extra money, donate. Black Youth Project, Black Voters Matter Fund. Money is kind of a tight thing these days for a lot of people. I get it, but at least join these groups so that they have more numbers, because with more numbers, they have more clout. And plus, you can stay informed with events. So the more informed you are, the better, because there are going to be more events happening.
Be a shame if all of this, you know, we have no attention span, right? I mean, people don't have an attention span. It's always we move from one crisis and then we forget about it and move to the next. Be a shame if after all this is over, people were distracted, didn't follow through, didn't continue the cause for real change. I worry about that, you know, because we have the attention span of a goldfish. We just, you know, we immediately move on to whatever's hot in the media, et cetera.
I understand that, but the attention span only has to last until November. We have to stop the bleeding. We really, really do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say people can relax after that, but we have to be pissed off until November. We have to have voter turnout. And then we take a breath and we have another conversation, multiple conversations, but we have to keep this at the forefront until November.
Pretty sad when we have to look to former presidents and the leaders of other nations for true leadership, right? We're looking at the speeches from Trudeau and from Merkel, even Barack Obama, and you think, you know, you forget what real leadership looks like and sounds like until you hear it. And there are people in my audience who get pissed off when we talk politics and they know I despise Trump and they write me angry letters. And those people can just straight up piss off, right? I think this is a human rights issue that we as moral creatures and humanists have to talk about. We're in the middle of a constitutional crisis. We're in the middle of a cultural crisis, a moral crisis. This is not hyperbole. I mean, you and I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. Have you?
No. And I'm 40, I'm 47. Plus people older, a lot older than us are saying the same thing. Students of history. This is hard. This is ridiculous. And this is obviously an authoritarian play. And obviously I'm going to fight authoritarianism because the authoritarians that would be in power do not look like me. I will be the resistance. I will be the opposite of what this country wants. So of course I'm going to fight, not only for me, but because we're not an authoritarian country. We should not slide down that path.
Will Judy, my friend, it's an honor to be able to hang out and talk with you. And I'm just a fan, you know, and these are weird, wild, crazy, often painful times. But, you know, I think you and I are talking about understanding and solutions. That's a place to start. Thanks for helping to educate us and help walk us through your perspective on all this stuff. We'll continue to watch the headlines and stand shoulder to shoulder as best we can. And all my best down there in Houston. You be safe, okay?
Thank you, Seth. I'll see you in the streets.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming Freethought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.